The Sunstone Foundation presents Balancing Career and Family, Trends for the Future, recorded live at the 1985 Sunstone Theological Symposium, held August 21st through the 24th. We take you to the Westin Hotel, Utah, in Salt Lake City, Utah, where the program is just now beginning.
Celia Warner. My mother is Doris S. Warner on the program. Unfortunately, she couldn't balance her career and her family obligation to me to come and introduce the speaker this morning, so I had to do it for her. I'm the news editor at Sunstone. Cecilia Warner? Okay. Camille DeLong is our speaker this morning. Camille obtained her Bachelor of Science and Master's degrees from Brigham Young University in Psychology and Marriage and Family Therapy, and she's had a private practice in Provo for the past 8 years. She did postgraduate work at Purdue University and MIT and taught at Brigham Young University in the area of family sciences and marriage and family therapy. She's also received grants to create child abuse and crisis centers. Well, that's child abuse crisis centers. She has published an article entitled Balancing Professional and Private Lives, an Education Program for Professional Couples, in a publication, Structural Family Facilitation Programs, Enrichment, Education, and Treatment. Camille and her husband Tom have served as consultants to organizations focusing on the interaction between career and family concerns. She has 3 children and 2 horses and 1 cat. Welcome, won't you, Camille DeLong. Thank you. I'm going to even try and undo this and see if I can walk around with it. Sometimes a visual representation of some of the things I'm going to talk about has more impact than just me saying them. So I wanted to start out with some of the very important things that are going on in our society today that are going to determine what family life and work life and social life are going to look like somewhat in the future. When I first heard this, I was rather shocked, and they change so rapidly that I find myself constantly having to go through journals and articles to keep up on the current statistics. Currently, 1/10 of American families have a mother who stays at home and a father who is the breadwinner and children under age 18. 1/10. This is what is commonly known as the traditional family. 1/10 of our population are currently traditional families and is rapidly diminishing. 1/2 of all marriages end in divorce. I've also heard the percentage is closer to 52% rather than 50. 1/2 of all children by the age of 18 will have lived in a single-parent family for some time. 3/5 or more, and climbing rapidly, of all marriages have 2 incomes. 45.6 million women are in the workforce and climbing rapidly. 53% of the entire adult female population is working for pay today. This is from the 1980 census, as compared to 34% in 1950 and 43% in 1970. So you can see the rapid escalation of women in the workforce. 57% of working women are heads of households or whose husbands earn less than $10,000. These demographics are substantially influencing our society. Now, and some of the other realities that you are all very aware of are some of the economic realities. I won't go into great detail. You're aware of them. You talk about them at home a lot and try to plan for them. Inflation, job uncertainty, new technology, the job obsolescence, our strong foreign competition, economic uncertainty, and the worker migrations going to the Southwest and the Southern states, where hopefully find more jobs and where unfortunately that is not always so. So given these economic and sociological factors, we're seeing a very big change. The major change we're going to be seeing is the two-gender workforce is here to stay and is going to get larger and larger, and the impact greater and greater. Now, I want to talk about the impact of the two-gender workforce on various aspects. First, for the individual, You may be aware of the recent surge in studying adult development cycles. You're familiar with Passages by Gail Shahey, Transformations by, I can't remember his first name, Gold, and all the different type of self-help books and pop psychology that focus a lot on the midlife crisis, the emptiness syndrome, the settling down of the years in the 50 years of age and the 60 years of age, and that is very, very current in our literature. Before, we've been focusing on children's developmental stages, and adult developmental stages have been ignored. So that is very popular right now. One of the questions that is usually asked in looking at those the adult developmental stages is, must success cost so much? Usually we're finding in about the 40s and the 50s, 50 years of age and 40 years of age, when the career is plateauing, and this has been mostly done on studies with men, most men are saying, is this all there is? And they want to return back to kind of spend some time those last years with their teenagers. And the teenagers, who are unused to having fathers involved in their lives, sort of look at dad and say, who are you? Why do you want to come back now? It's a little bit late. I want to go off with my friends. And in studies that have been done through the United States, Canada, Europe, Northern Europe, with thousands and thousands of middle and upper managers, we're finding that the men are saying, I have all the money I want, I have job satisfaction, but in the process I have lost my family and I have lost my marriage. And that's where there is a book entitled This Must Success Cost So Much? Because that's what we're finding out is happening with many of the managers and upper managers throughout the world. So one of the results of this is people are starting to redefine what is success. What is success for them? And this is probably the major premise that my husband and I use in teaching our class at BYU and in the seminars that we've taught around the country. What is success? And is it going to be a one-prong approach or a three-prong approach? And what are the trade-offs? If you're going to be a top CEO, what are the trade-offs? What does that mean in terms of your marriage and your family and your quality of life? So we work with our students very directly and forcefully in pushing them to define for themselves. Some may choose that trade-off, and some may not. But to pop some of the myths of saying you really can have it all, it's just simply a question of trade-offs and balance. Because when you're spending time in one place, you're going to have a difficult time putting a lot of that time in the other place. There are some very interesting articles in the business magazines. One is entitled When It's Harder to Go Home, written about upper, middle, and upper-level managers, about their management style and how much the business and the job takes out of them. And when they come home, they are just simply drained. And then we also hear a lot of men talk about going away on the business trips on the expense account and eating caviar and lobster. And staying in nice hotels, and they come home, and the first thing the wife says is, why didn't you take out the garbage? You know, it's kind of an abrupt change. Or the children are saying, come play horsey with me, Daddy, or dance on the lawn or throw me the ball. And there's a very great shift that someone needs to make in their work sort of functioning and their home functioning. Some are very good at making that shift. Most are not. And then things we're finding with women is that women are also having a bit of a hard time making that shift, because in the workplace, they have to take more of a masculine stance. The workplace is geared for that and for the assertive, aggressive, fast-moving, planning pace. The qualities of the heart are not always valued, whereas the qualities of the heart at home are the things that are valued in it, and it's a difficult shift to make. And so this particular aspect for individuals is starting to be talked about more now. And how can we make this shift? And how can I be a good father or a mother at home, but yet a good manager and a good business person in the workplace? Now, another great shift we're finding is the impact on marriages. Very, very great stress. We have more and more two-income families, and there are many implications of that. You've maybe heard of some of the articles coming out now of what happens when she makes more money than he does, or she's promoted and he isn't. and some of the stresses and strains that puts on a marriage. With some people, it's not a big thing. But for other people, it is a very difficult situation, and in some cases end up in divorce because they are willing to go with the workplace and with a promotion rather than having to be less than what they're capable of to stay in a marriage. Some couples can get into therapy and work it out very well, and so they're able to accommodate it. But again, there are new questions being asked that have not been asked before. So it is shaping and making a difference in the marriages in our country. There was a study done, I think, in about 1975, determining how much of the housework and household functioning was done by men and women, or husbands and wives. Women did 80%, children did 10%, and husbands did 10%. Now, recently, some of you may have read the Newsweek article on the changing in men's roles, and one paragraph talked about the marvelous progress we've made that men are now participating twice as much in household work as they used to. What they're talking about is they're talking about 20%. Okay, from 10% to 20%. Now, granted, that is improvement, and it's going in the right direction. But still, somehow, we still define housework and childcare as a woman's job rather than a father's job. Again, we're going into somewhat of a difference in our society with involved fathering. So some of the nurturing tasks are changing, not necessarily the housework. Boy, that's sort of the bottom line. If you share the housework, you're really on your way. But fathers are getting more involved in child care. I'm seeing more fathers at the supermarket with children. 15 years ago, how many fathers would you have seen waiting in the doctor's office with their sick children? Now it's fairly common to have that happen. So fathers are getting more involved, and this is a very positive change for the better, because the women simply can't do it all. Now, most of us try, and some of us think our husbands or our male friends are biologically fated to be impatient with children, and men and women are finding out that is not necessarily so. Women have been told all their lives that they can learn how to do it, and now men are saying, you know, I can learn how to do it too. So if men can realize that biological determinism does not mean that they are unable to nurture and enjoy children. It simply takes practice and teaching. And there is a very large movement in the country towards more involved fathering. As you can tell, I'm pretty excited about that movement. Okay, some of the other questions. Again, whose career comes first? My husband and I were interviewed by a writer for Working Women magazine about 2 months ago. And this is a very enlightened woman from the Boston area, dual career family. She interviewed each of us separately. And she said to me, "What sacrifices in his career has your husband made to accommodate your career?" And I went ahead and answered the question. Yes, he's made some sacrifices. He went to probably a less prestigious, less powerful, and a little more low-key university than some others he could have gone to, et cetera, et cetera. After the interview, I was thinking about all the things I could have said and didn't say later that night, and it struck me. We don't usually ask men what kinds of ask women, what kinds of sacrifices did you make in your career so that you could accommodate husband and children? We generally ask the men that are involved, but we don't usually ask the women. And it's an important question, because if you are going to have a dual career family and be able to raise children, chances are both of you will be making some sacrifices in your career. Some other interesting statistics. 97% of men in top corporate positions are married with children. There's something like 30% of women in top corporate positions are married. The vast majority of women who are making it in business at the middle and upper and management levels are single or divorced. Dual career families place a great strain on marriages. And then you add children to that, and you're talking about even a greater strain. One of the articles I was reading, they were talking about, and in some ways it's easier for a single parent to accommodate children and rise in the corporation than it is to be married and have children and rise in the corporation. For those of you who are, who have friends, who are determined to make it big in the corporate field. There are a lot of single people who are willing to just live their whole lives for the corporation. And you're competing against those people. Right now, we have the baby boomer market where we have many, many people for fewer jobs. You are in some very tough competition. I'm trying to think if this is later. Oh, it's another statistic, though. The good news is by 1990 or 1995, there's going to be a shortage of people in the labor force because of the post-baby boom, fewer number of children. So if you can hang on for a while, it will get better. Statistics will be able to be more helpful. Another burning question. Who is emotionally and physically responsible when both parents work? Now, who gets called when they're sick? Is it who's most available, or is it assumed that one parent may be over the other? Again, these kinds of things need to be worked out. Stresses and strains in the marriage. In a full-time, dual-career marriage, there is so much negotiation and scheduling, and there are even some of the children who carry around their schedule books, and they all sit down maybe a couple of times a week so everybody can schedule in the time they need, and they schedule in family time and talk time and play time and work time, and everybody is very, very scheduled, which leaves out a lot of spontaneous things, possibly, or some people who are very creative are able to schedule those in and make sure they happen. But it takes organization, forethought, and planning. And again, equality in marriage. Does one person consistently sacrifice for the other? And is that agreed upon goal? It's not necessarily wrong to do so. What makes it sometimes dysfunctional if one partner assumes that the other partner is going to do it and it's never talked about? There are many, many ways to handle the dual career marriage if people are able to talk to each other and negotiate. It was a very conscious decision on my part to let my husband's career take dominance, and I would take sort of a second seat on that, partly because I really wanted to be home a lot. I work one day a week in my private practice, and other than that, I'm home with children, and I love it, and I love to go to work, and I love to go home. There are times scheduling gets very hectic when I have extra meetings, when he has extra meetings, but that was a conscious choice, and I'm happy with it, and he recognizes the sacrifice I'm making, and I recognize the sacrifice he is making in his career so that he can be home when I'm at work. And it's a definite trade-off that we like, that works for us. Doesn't work for everybody, but it works for us. But there are additional stresses and strains in dual career or two-wage earner families. One of the other benefits is there is less financial stress. It's nice to know that the financial burden is being shared by two people. In some cases, one of the very big benefits is that it enables, say, a husband or a wife to take on a second career, maybe to quit a job in a big company and start something up on their own. There's a big increase on small business and entrepreneur behavior because of the two-paycheck family. Another thing I found in marriages is that I've had husbands say to me, you know, my wife can support herself easily. It's really nice to know that she is with me because she wants to be, not because she is in bondage financially. And many, many people that I work with in marriages I see that are very dysfunctional, the women say, I can't get a divorce. I can't hold a job. I can't make money. My children would suffer. So I'm willing to stay in a fairly destructive situation because I'm in bondage financially. And that's the trade-off I have to make. So that's another benefit that's happened. Up until about 6 years ago, people were saying, well, we don't know the impact on children yet of dual career families, of two parents working, things like that. It's too early to tell. The other thing that is still true is the children's reaction to parents, both parents working, depends upon the happiness the parents feel about it. If mom is happy to go to work and is pleasant about it, and if dad supports mom and there's a good feeling about it, then chances are you're going to have a good feeling about it with your children and everyone will be supportive. But if mom is angry about having to go to work, angry that somehow dad isn't bringing in enough, or that she's stuck in a job she hates, then it can be destructive on the children. That was the main premise we've had set life for the last 15 years or so, and is still holding true. The other things that are coming out now that are much more based on actual watching of these children. Some things are hopeful, some things are disturbing, and I've got a couple of references and books that some of you may be interested in. One is that children are growing up too fast. And there's a book here, The Hurried Child, that I highly recommend. It gives a very good synopsis on developmental stages of children and the effects of forcing children to be scheduled too fast. The main job of children, especially children under age 6, is to be able to play and sort of find out what the world is like, to be able to evolve and create their world and build forts and play outside and do creative things in a rather non-structured way. When we have children under age 6 needing to go to daycare centers or nursery schools or preschools for 8 to 10 hours a day, which is most of the child's waking day, they're rushed into a structured society that values work, organization, deadlines, and things that developmentally are not the best things for the child to have to deal with at that very young age. At the older ages and above age 10, we're finding children are able to be more responsible and actually have a better self-concept because they know that they can do things alone, that they are capable, and that they are an important person in the family to be able to help and do things. It is very important to make sure the child isn't overburdened. I see some children who are so responsible they've never been children in their lives. They've simply been miniature adults that have helped raise mom and dad. So there's a fine line to how much responsibility a child needs to have. You've heard of the current dilemma with latchkey children. There is a problem with that. There's an increase of problems with children of being afraid of molestation by brothers, sisters, neighbors, etc., of physical abuse in families. And so now there is a response in some parts of the country to help solve the problem of latchkey children. I'm going to get into some of the solutions companies have come up with later to be helpful in that. And you've heard some of the hotlines where the child can call on the hotline and talk to someone at home. So we have the pros and the cons of situations like this. But the hardest age for children with two high-powered working people, unless they've got a live-in person in the home, which can be a pretty good situation, it is hardest for the children under 6. And my heart cries for children under 3 who have to be in type of centers type or daycare centers 10 hours a day. I'm just frightened about the possibilities of the social alienation and future development of the children. Most of those statistics come from a book called The Erosion of Childhood by Valerie Saransky. Very disturbing book. It took me a long time to get through it because I could only take it in small dosages. But very enlightening. If any of you are involved in agencies or corporations or a parent needing to find good daycare, this is a book to read to sort of tell you some things to look for. Yes. The book, The Erosion of Childhood by Valerie Saransky. The other thing we find in our classes that we teach and also in talking to managers is that most of us believe in the manana syndrome. And as I say to people that I work with, well, you can believe it if you want to. You know it isn't true and you know it doesn't work, but you still want to believe it, so go ahead and believe it. And that is that we can put off our time with our children, that somehow we can recapture the 5-year-old birthday party that we missed later. You know, I'll devote my time to my career now, and later on, I'll spend time with my kids. The myth is that those developmental times, that's it. You miss them, they're gone. There is some reconnecting that can be done, especially in a household that has been free of conflict and pretty supportive and loving. But there are some of those crucial developmental stages you cannot recapture. The younger the child, the harder it is to recapture it. Again, that's why my heart aches for children under 3 who have to spend 10 hours a day in daycare. So, the mañana syndrome generally does not work. In some cases, it can. And in a few instances, and if you miss one birthday party, but you're there for 3 birthday parties, you're probably all right. But if it's a consistent thing of having to miss significant events in your child's life, then you're not going to be able to make up some of that. We can still go on believing it in certain parts of our lives, and I even run into myself believing it. But generally, it is not true. The other thing that I find happens with children, and I know you've all seen it, is the buy-off. Well, we are going to make more money so we can buy our children all the things we didn't have. And kids will get demanding and ask for more and more. But what they're really saying is, I want time from you. I want a relationship with you. But children don't know how to say that, so they do other crazy things instead. So another thing with our affluent society is the buy-off. Or if we can take a vacation once a year, really fancy, fly everybody to Hawaii, and we'll have 2 weeks to connect once a year, it just doesn't work very well. The other myth that I haven't written up here is the quality versus quantity. Again, this has been very popular since the 70s of, well, it's not the quality of time, it's not the quantity of time, it's the quality. What we're finding now is in order to get in a certain amount of quality, you have to have some quantity. You drop in on a child's life, you know, every 6 weeks and say, okay, child, let's have a real heart-to-heart talk now. What's going on at your school? What's going on at your friends? You know, that child is going to look at you and say, well, you know, what are you talking about? Why now? You know, and you're doing it on your schedule rather than when the child is in the midst of something. So that myth is also now being looked at in a careful way. Yes, quality time is important, but you need to have some quantity to get the quality. Now, one of the questions my husband and I, and specifically my husband because he does so much on fathering, one of the questions he's most commonly asked, especially by prospective fathers, is how much quantity time do I need to put in? You know, how many minutes a day or how many times a week? What's the minimum I can put in to get the best results? Now, granted, we mostly teach MBA students, you know, who want to quantify and regulate and classify, which isn't always bad, but human relationships don't quite fit under those things. The average graduate student in the United States today spends 3 seconds per child per day, one-on-one time. The average father spends 3 minutes per child per day, one-on-one time. If you want to have that relationship, somehow you've either got to stack it up, you know, so you can get maybe 20 minutes on one day and miss some of the other days. But be aware of what kind of time you're spending, and are you putting in some of that quantity so you can get the quality? The last section I wanted to talk about is the impact on organizations. And I've just read a report put out by Touche Ross, accounting firm with about, oh, I think, 10 representatives, a congressman, a woman in charge of the research center at Wellesley College, the president of Alcoa Aluminum, president of Campbell's Soup Company, a roundtable discussion. And they talk about the two-gender workforce and accommodating people in the workforce and child care. And at the very end was a true quote. For some of you it will be disturbing, for some it may be reassuring, which is, given all the changes, given the rise of women in the workforce, that'll be at least 50%, given the fact that women in numbers will increase in the upper management levels, there will be some changes, but in general, the workaholic is going to get promoted. The person who is willing to devote their life to the corporation is going to get promoted. That's just the way it's going to be. And changes will be slow in coming. In some organizations, they are more able to accommodate and be flexible than in others. I remember the president of Alcoa said, it's going to be very difficult in ours because we're so technology-oriented, whereas Campbell's Soup people are doing some very innovative things that I'm going to mention in a minute. All organizations say they value the family. Well, of course we do, and we want. And the myth was, or the saying was always, we wanted to hire a good, stable family man. Well, another thing is, a good, stable family man also usually has a good, stable, supportive wife. So essentially, the company is getting two for the price of one. And another reason that so few women with marriages and families are going to make it to the top is they don't have wives. And one of the big debates when I was living in Boston and was attending seminars is the women would say, now how can we find a wife? And they talked about hiring wives. Okay, hiring someone to run the errands and to bring the things to the office and to take care of the children and do those kinds of things. So again, you've got many single people who don't have other responsibilities, but for the people who are committed to family life and organizations, it is difficult. It is very difficult. You all know how seductive organizations are, with also the prestige, the benefits, the excitement, the money. If your values and if your priorities and your balance is not very clear, the organization, with its explicit goals and its explicit rewards, is going to take over that priority spot simply because the rewards are much more explicit. Very long. At the end of the day, they don't say, oh, mommy or daddy, you have been such a good mommy or daddy today. I really appreciate all the work you've done. Here's part of my jelly bean bag or something. You know, children really aren't going to do that until later on when they have their own children and realize what you've done. So the rewards, the explicit rewards and payoff, are with the working community and with the organization. So it takes people very centered and very decisive, taking over power in their own lives and making decisions. Because of a lot of people talking about child care, and some organizations are more aware of it than others, there are beginning to be on-site child care facilities. Conant Designers in Salt Lake City has a center. I think they accommodate only about 10 to 12 children, but they find fathers and mothers leaving work to come and spend time, lunchtime with the children, or kind of coming down throughout the day to have some contact with children. This is a good situation. It's a small number daycare. They've got very qualified people. In the readings I made, Campbell Soup has on-site daycare. There's some technological companies in Massachusetts, I can't remember which one specifically, who have on-site daycare. The corporations say, we're willing to do it if we can see it's going to be give us a payoff in the productivity of our employees and in enhancing employee loyalty. The ones that have done it are very pleased, saying, we have found that it has paid off for us. And we're also attracting employees that we might not have otherwise had, such as women who want to work part-time but are uncomfortable with daycare situations. I spoke in a women in management seminar about 2 years ago, and I think we had 300 people in the audience. And at the question and answer period, the one big issue was child care. But interestingly, when you go to management meetings where men are mostly in the audience, we found this in our classes too, the one big issue is, what do I have to do to get promoted? And with the women, it's child care. So it is still seen as a woman's problem rather than a parent's problem, or a mother and a father problem. Some of the demands and requests are being felt. Some organizations are transferring less out of pressure of men and women saying, no, I'm not going to move every 2 years. And I would rather stay at the current level and not be promoted than to move again. And that is starting to be able to be felt. Companies are also finding that frequent transfers are financially draining. They're just not worth it. They're just not profitable. It's too expensive to do that. So the transfers are slowing down, and you will find companies that are responsive to that. Although, in some companies, there's an unwritten rule of how many times you can turn down a move before you're shuttled off to the side. You know, in some, you can turn down once, but if you turn it down twice, you know, you're in outer darkness. You have just plateaued your career. So the culture is changing slightly, but it's very specific to each organization. There is some flex time being instituted, but not much, because when you have workers coming in at various times during the day and you have to have a meeting, you can't have it in the morning at 9 because only some people are there, or you can't have it later at night because only some people are there. So it's difficult to institute, but some organizations are working and looking at doing some things with flex time. Paternity leave, we're finding some interesting things about that. I think it is Sweden, where paternity leave is a national priority. And the men are getting, I think, like several weeks to a month or so paternity leave. And what they're finding is the men not spending more time with the children, the men are spending more time in the pubs on these types of leave. And so ideally, you know, we can have the government or we can have the corporation institute some of these policy. But the difference is will people take advantage of it? Or will they simply spend more time doing the other leisure type of activities that they have very little time for? That remains to be seen. And when it's more generalized and in this country, you know, the statistics are still out on that. It'd be interesting to see that. That is the end of the formal part. Each one of these topics I've gone over, we usually spend about an hour on in a 15-week course. So you've received a very thumbnail sketch of all of this. And I'm open for questions. I believe I'm supposed to stop at 10:30. 10 which? 10:45? Oh, great. Then we do have some time. Questions? So I've rushed through this. Yes, please. Okay, the one-prong type of success is I will be successful if I am CEO of my company by the year 1990. That's it. And if I don't make that, I'm a failure as a person. Or the first 5 years. You know, I will reach this level by the first 5 years. In the MBA courses that we're teaching, we're finding a smoothing out of that. And saying, well, I want to be at a level I enjoy my company, but I also want to have a good relationship with my wife, and I want to have been able to spend some time with my kids and also be involved in some community efforts. So we're finding in with many people, and this isn't just BYU where I've been teaching. We taught a class at Harvard. We've taught a class in the Northwest, you know, different places, California, that this seems to be a general phenomenon of saying, yes, career success is important. However, it is not the only thing in my life. And so there's several areas the person is gauging their success in rather than just the one area. And so, you know, so consequently, then you have more room for success in your whole life. Yes? In the home, yes. In the people I work with, teaching classes, clients I see, I find generally men are married to their careers and women are married to their children. Not in a necessarily positive sense do I mean that. Mothers over-involved with their children and living out all the unmet needs through the children, whereas the father is having his affair with work. And mom and dad very rarely, you know, have that togetherness. So yes, I find that not just in the career of out in the business world, but in the career of the home, the same thing. If it's one pronged, you're going to be an unbalanced person. Right, so I see women asking that too. Yes? Yes, it's better for young children if they can stay in their home or in a home they're familiar with and comfortable with. It also works better if you have maybe two or three children to one adult caretaker. And so this is more common in the East than in the West. People have nannies or au pairs that live in the home and are kind of a part of the family. In some situations, there are women who are lousy mothers. There just are. And in this culture, we don't like to think about that. But there's some women who just are not cut out for it. And in those situations, they've hired maybe a nanny or an au pair who just loves kids, who's just crazy about the kids. It might be better for the kids to have the au pair, you know, than the mother. And the mother can come in and have contact with them. Now, I wouldn't be able to live with that because I want to be the one my children are bonded to. I'd be real uncomfortable having them really bonded to someone else. But for some people, it's better for everybody. So it can work. The problem is finding the right fit. And there's lots of time and energy and money spent on that. But we're also looking at people probably with two very high incomes who can afford that type of help. And if you have the option, you know, you can look at it. Yes, in the very back, please. Right. Another myth that is being debunked is the difference between housework and nurturing. We used to put them all in the same category of homemaking. Now, there is a very big difference between playing with your children and washing the kitchen floor. I'd much rather play with my children and hire my kitchen floor done. So again, that's a distinction that many people are making. Hire the housekeeping tasks and leave yourself open for the things that are really, really important. Now, even in traditional families, I know a lot of traditional mothers who neglect their children, and they don't work on a paid job outside the home, but they run 85 community organizations, and there are constant phone calls coming in, and it's a business out of the home, and the children are simply told, you know, get outside, go watch TV, go watch a video, here's some money, go play somewhere else. You know, so it's possible to neglect children while you are physically present in the home. Another concept is emotional unavailability. Are you in a job that drains you so much so that when you get home, are you an empty shell? The body is there, the mind is gone. And when the children sense that, they increase their misbehavior because they have to get louder and louder to get your attention. So another question is does this job leave enough emotional availability so that I can be with my children, rather just lying on the couch and saying, go away and leave me alone, which point all of us hit at some point in time. But if it's happening every night, that's tough for everyone. And your children are going to act more obnoxious because they've got to get through that wall. Yes, please.
So you've been talking amongst very low-level...
That's right. Yes. Yes. Women are still making 53 cents to the dollar with equivalent jobs of men. And most women work because they have to, which, again, is even a more negative impact because they may dislike their jobs. They may feel trapped. They may be angry at their husband on some level for not being able to make more money. Also, most of these women are single parents. And it's an awful situation because also they're the ones who can't afford the most creative methods of daycare. They need to go into government-subsidized and very crowded daycare facilities. So, you know, everybody's kind of starting three steps back. I don't know solutions except for saying the situation is very sad and needs to have some work on it. It's interesting, other countries in Europe studying the daycare situation, Israel, Russia, Cuba, or different countries that were being looked at in this book, child care is a national priority. Some of them do a very good job of it. Some have methods I wouldn't want to have. But child care is a national priority. Our national priority is making money. In a country that we say, again back to organization, in a country that we say, oh, we value family life, we value children, but what do we do with our resources? They're not put on care of children as much as they are in other areas. So it is a hard situation. Yes, please. I would really recommend the book to you, first of all. You know, I can give you a few things here. And some is there some time for spontaneity? You know, are there a couple of mornings a week where they don't have to be up until the babysitter's by 8 o'clock? Which isn't always bad, but are there some mornings where that doesn't have to happen? Are there times for cuddling and wrestling and tickling and just being with each other? And just kind of talking about day's events. Do you have a job that leaves you emotionally spent? Are you able to come home and still have some time with children? If flex time is available or if your home is close to your workplace, can you go home for lunch? Or can you take out time during the day to kind of go check in and see how things are? You know, is there availability of contact? If you're married, can a spouse share some of those responsibilities so that you're not doing it all? Talk to the children. We have the same phrase in our house. I'm not your slave. And my daughter says, I know. I guess I'll do it myself. But again, there's a balance between having children being responsible and simply having them be the housekeeper for the parents. You know, is the 8-year-old coming home and fixing dinner every night? You know, that's an unrealistic burden. And some of it is in reading books to find out about child development and what children need at certain stages. I think would be very helpful for you and would probably reduce your guilt. You're probably doing a better job than you think. If you're that worried about it, you're probably doing some very good things. And if you're looking at it, chances are you're doing better than you think. But if you can institute some specific things and say, oh, but I'm doing this and this and this, then you'll feel better and they'll feel better. So it's a tightrope. You're always walking a tightrope. So I'd highly recommend the book. Yes, please.
I have the same frustration with
use the churches that are unavailable.
Yeah, that would be so important.
Someone told me the most recent Ensign had an article on working mothers. Is that? Oh, is it very mild? It's a step. Yeah, it's a step. Yeah. If any of you are here in positions of influence, please help. I have a professor friend. Do you have a knowing? Okay. And I wonder if that would hinder or have an impact on the tax-exempt status. You know, I don't know. How it doesn't? But if it's free or, say, traded in labor or something, it wouldn't be. Not-for-profit organization. Yeah, and maybe in different... You've looked into it. Do you have one? Okay, I know several people who've talked about this. There's a man in organizational behavior at BYU who has done a lot of work in research for the church who wants to get a national daycare system through church buildings. So far, they haven't listened to him very much, but he's thinking about it. Yes, ma'am. No. And again, the other thing is, which is the bottom line for the whole talk, is taking responsibility for our own lives. And secondly, making a difference. You know, having a discussion like this is very different than what happened 10 years ago. And there are people who can say, hey, you know, here's some things that can be done. The obstacles are large, you know, financial expenditure, legal ramifications we've talked about, but possible. And those of us who have needs are on the ground floor, you know, maybe can band together and get some things to happen. That's how things happen. And to take responsibility for our own lives, and again, in corporations, the church is any organization, if you allow the organization to define you, to define who you are and what you're going to be, you're going to end up very lopsided. And you will have given all your power away, and at the end of, you know, your life in your 50s, when you start looking back and reflecting what's going on and how was the balance, if you've given all the power to the organization, it's going to be very lopsided. So it's personal responsibility. Yes, ma'am.
In our community, the seniors have been taking care of the home.
That's wonderful. Yes, and I've heard a lot of programs where the schools are allowing children to stay longer, and some corporations who are hiring teenagers after school to come and help with the workforce until parents can get off of work. So there are some creative alternatives available to us. Yes, right here in the back. One of the most exciting things I see going on is in computer programming and computers. There's a lot of work being hired for people to do in their home because you can have the computer at home and you can tap into the computer at work, and there is a lot of innovation going on in that field, probably more so than any other field because it is new. And also the jobs are not gender stereotyped like they are in many of the other things. Are you laughing knowing other things? Okay, so home is better. Get them out of here. But in the reading I've done, there's some very exciting things going on there. Some professions will be able to be more flexible than others. That's why I love mine. You know, I can be at work when I want to be, and I can be home when I want to be. There's some things I curtail. Boy, are there some people in the audience who have that? Yes. Speak louder, please. Yeah, did you have some examples to give her? Yes. Yes. For tax season. Not so much. You really need to get out and ask, you know, find groups and say, okay, I'm taking a survey. Yeah, there's a woman in the very back. Corporations that have experimented with part-time workers find they get more work out of the part-time worker. Because who really puts in just the half-time? You know, you kind of put it in until you feel you can leave it. So there's a good deal. The drawback is if you're part-time, you usually don't get job benefits. You know, retirement and health care. Job sharing, from what I've heard, some of you may have more recent information, again, is difficult because of the benefits and the insurance packages. Insurance companies are still a bit behind the times on that and cooperating. Although I know a woman who tried to split a professorship at BYU, and they couldn't do it because of the way the benefits packages were done. So it's a great idea, and if we could work, you know, figure out how to work some of them out and probably get some good results. Yeah, Lynn in the back? And full benefits with the switching off. Okay, yeah, they're still getting in the 40-hour week then. Yes. Over here, please. Okay, so the flex time is coming in slowly. And again, it's a result of valued employees talking to bosses and saying, hey, we need to get some of these things changed, otherwise I can't work any longer. So if you're a valued employee, chances are you can get some things. If you're not so valued, you'll probably lose your job. So again, band together, sense out the culture, the mores of the organization. Some will be much more flexible than others. But it's going to happen, because if corporations don't respond, they'll lose money. That's really the bottom line. And again, the changes have been made because it is making sense to start looking at changes, because it's profitable to look at changes. Yes? I don't want to end on a downer, but I may have to. What? Do you see changes?
I really do.
Yeah. Well, and the increase in the entrepreneurs who are saying, I am not going to put up with this organizational structure stuff that I'm just locked into. There are so many that are saying that, and that's exciting. And again, they do have the flexibility. So, you know, change will probably come from that direction.
Involves risk,
sure. But it also involves, you know, no pain, no gain. I need to finish because I can see our next people needing to prepare here. Thank you for being here. This has been enjoyable for me to present.